Boa noite. No ano 2000, ele foi eleito o rockstar mais sexy do mundo. E olha, 21 anos depois, 5,9 recém-completados, ele ainda pode bem defender o título que a torcida apoia. Aliás, na eterna disputa entre os roqueiros para ver quem é mais bad boy, ele sempre correu por fora. É o astro mais bem comportado do rock. Ele conta que a única vez em que aprontou foi com 4 anos de idade. Saiu de casa sozinho e bateu na vizinha, quer dizer, na porta da vizinha, para pedir cereal de café da manhã, porque sua mãe estava dormindo até tarde. Sem sexo explícito ou drogas escancaradas, mas com muito rock and roll, ele conquistou seu lugar merecido no Hall da Fama. Vendeu 130 milhões de álbuns, se apresentou para 40 milhões de pessoas em mais de 50 países. Nunca fez plano de parar, mas parou. A pandemia o parou, como a todos nós. Tinha um disco novo, prontinho para ser lançado, uma tour mundial para cair na estrada. Mas ele não ficou esperando a pandemia passar, foi à luta. Trabalhou para levar comida às pessoas mais atingidas pela paralisia econômica e ainda arrumou tempo para escrever, compor, cantar e gravar novas músicas para o novo álbum. Na noite de hoje, nós vamos receber o príncipe herdeiro de Nova Jersey, John Bon Jovi.
Hello, Pedro. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Take the opportunity to congratulate you for your 59 since last March the 2nd, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Congratulations. In 2006, you told the late Larry King, when he asked you if you saw yourself performing at 60, then you said, "I don't think I'll be touring and doing it as actively as Mick Jagger has when I'm his age." So now, 15 years after Mick, 15 years ago, Mick was 63. Now you're 59, and you were supposed to be touring now, if not for the pandemics. What has changed?
Not much. I think I'm sticking to that word. I have to say that I still look to Jagger as the hallmark of where you're supposed to end. I'm waiting for the Stones to retire someday just so that I know where the end is. They keep moving it and moving it and moving it, and they do it on such an incredible level. But personally for me, I still don't see how I'm gonna ever want to be doing it, you know, as long as he has.
But when you see the young man, you were 18 when you started your career. Are you a better rock and roller nowadays?
No. Well, I'm much more experienced, I can tell you that. You know, it's been an incredible journey. I've enjoyed myself immensely. And anytime you write a song, you are excited and want to bring it to life. So that means you make a record. And when the record turns out as well as you hoped it would, you want to share it with people. So what was strange about the 2020 album is this was the first time in my career where it seems like the album was in a vacuum. Technically, it's out there in the world, but I have no idea what the reaction to it is. I never got to perform it for anybody. And so, you know, that's tough. It's a strange way to feel. And so I think if I make a record, I'm going to want it to perform a couple of times, maybe not 100 times on a world tour, but I'd like to play it in front of people and see the reaction, see if I still like it. So, you know, I think that if I were to say it was over right now, today, I'm done, it would be a little unfulfilling just because I didn't get to see the reaction to the latest record.
It's an awkward situation. What has changed in the album you were set out to do and to release actually in March 2020 and the one you ended up releasing in the end of the year?
6 months after. Yeah. You know, what happened was COVID. And again, it was a very unique situation because you have to understand that in order to intend to release a record on any given date, chances are it has been done for 3, 4, 5 months, maybe longer. You know, because by the time you turn in the mixes and the mastering and the packaging has to happen and all that. So a lot happened during that period between when I thought it was finished and then what was to be, you know. And so having the opportunity to look at the record finished and say, I think it's incomplete. I pulled it back. I went in, I rewrote a bunch of the existing songs' lyrics, and then I continued the writing process with Do What You Can and American Reckoning. And then I really realized this is a much sharper presentation of what I thought is a topical record. And now I'm very, 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 very happy with the result.
Do What You Can, most recent single, seems to be a call for people to act, to do what must be done, whatever can be done. Where did the idea of the song came from?
Do What You Can came to me a year ago in the very, very early days of what was to become this pandemic and that uncertainty. We were all unsure of our futures, both in New Jersey as well as any place in Brazil. And yet we were very aware, and I say we, I mean my wife and I, and our Soul Kitchen restaurants, that there were going to be people in need of food. And so our restaurants really rely on volunteers. And because of the pandemic and the shutdown, there was no opportunity to have any volunteers. So I was back washing the dishes the way I was when we started the restaurants. And we were still getting food put outside so that people could come and get it, both an in need and the surprise of the working man who, you know, was having a hard time at the grocery store. And so Dorothea, my wife, took a photograph of me and she wanted to post it on social media to let people know when we would be in the kitchen and what were the hours. And I didn't even know she took the photograph. And when she showed it to me and asked my opinion of those hours and day, I responded by saying, if you can't do what you do, do what you can. The next day I realized that's a song. And so I sat down and I wrote it. And, and it was a call to action. If you can't sing, you can help your community. And that's what the song was about.
When you had to choose a song to play during Joe Biden's inauguration, you chose kind of an anthem of hope, Here Comes the Sun. Do you actually believe America could be witnessing a new dawn?
I hope for the sake of our nation and whatever influence it has on any other nation that we are witnessing a reckoning and on a lot of fronts, whether it was because of the pandemic or our coming to a realization that it's time to deal with racism head on and regardless of your political affiliation, because I don't want to belittle the previous administration, because there are 75 million people who believe that that's the right direction for our country. That maybe what I hope is that this opportunity for our nation to come together and have conversations, not I'm right, you're wrong, you're right, I'm wrong. That's not a conversation, that's an argument. But in order to have a conversation, I can only hope that I chose that song for the right reasons. You know, that people should realize what has happened, not only to the election in our nation, but the world at large in this last year.
Are you a man of faith? You once said you were a recovering Catholic. And it's something ambiguous because that means you are becoming an atheist or reconnecting to Jesus.
No, I have great faith. I pray daily. My gratitude is rooted in my belief in that higher power of Jesus. But you know, do I go to church every Sunday? No, I don't. I've lost touch with the presentation. You know, with more of the presentation than the faith, you know, just the unbridled deep belief that doing good begets good.
You provided a religious education for your children?
I think it's a much broader one than I was given. You know, I was in and out of Catholic schools in grammar school and in high school. I didn't complete either. I went for a while, then I went to public school. Then I went back to Catholic high school. Then I went to Catholic public high school. So I think what we're teaching our kids is that Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Abraham, you know, everybody has some wise teachings to share, and they're all legitimate.
There's a story about when, about the time you wrote Living on a Prayer, that you thought the song was just okay, that it wasn't really that good, and that Richie Sambora supposedly said, "You're an idiot, the song is great." Did that actually happen?
Yeah. You know, the song, a couple of things about it. It when we wrote it, we left the afternoon, and the famous bass line that holds that song up came during rehearsal with the band, when we went to present it to the band and worked it up. But in the room, the simplicity of the chords didn't really lend itself to becoming the monster song that it's become. And the story was an age-old story of you and me, the power of we, you know, so it was a good story, but it had been told before. When we went into the rehearsal studio and the band and the producer and the engineer and everybody had their two cents, it became much more than the, you know, than it was. It was the sum of all the parts that made that song. And it's in defense of my naive take on the song, the raw bones of the song, it sounded like nothing else at the time, you know, like nothing else on the radio, nothing else that was popular. So it another reason for its enormous success is that it was a unicorn, you know, it set itself apart.
Yeah, a part of the very simplicity of it. Rihanna says that every time she goes to a karaoke, she sings Living on a Prayer. And what do you sing when you go to a karaoke?
I don't say that I go to karaoke ever. I walked into one as a part of a charity event one time, but I'm not really one to go in there and sing. I sing a lot outside of karaoke.
I would bet you would sing Sinatra. Is he still a role model for you?
He was a pretty great role model, wasn't he? All that Mr. Sinatra ultimately accomplished in his life, I think he should be proud of, and his legacy. So he would be a great role model, yeah.
You are married to your high school sweetheart 32 years now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you've been called the poster boy for marriage. You and Dot, you call her Dot or Dorothea?
No, just Dorothea.
Dorothea. You and Dorothea both had a pretty intense social life. You're both workaholics, had four kids. And then comes the pandemic. How did your marriage take the pandemic? Stuck at home, empty nests. Was it a new challenge?
No, it wasn't. And in truth, I think it probably strengthened, well, I know that it strengthened the bonds of myself and my kids, especially the older kids who have, you know, since moved on. But having them back home and seeing them as adults, then the younger kids watching as the writing process was so intimate, you know, especially on those very topical songs. I think that my youngest son, Romeo, who's now really taken up the guitar and songwriting and singing as a passion, and something I think he'll pursue as a result of the pandemic. And then we worked diligently, whether it was at one of the soul kitchens or in the creation of a food bank in the pandemic. So we tried to make the most out of that time.
Do you plan to, when and if you go to the tour again, you plan to come to Brazil?
I always hope to come to Brazil. I mean, our last shows were in October of 19, and it was all built around the Rock in Rio shows. And of course, Sao Paulo and Rio are always highlights of any tour. So of course, we know just how wonderful the Brazilian audiences have been for us. And so my intent would be to come back, yeah.
Has it become easier for you to write and sing about yourself today?
I think it has. Yeah, I do. I think it has. You know, there was a period in time that only comes with experience and having done it often, that you have to figure out what your voice is and if you want messages in the songs and how much of yourself you want to give away. And there was a period in time where I was very defensive about what I wanted to project. I thought that my audience didn't want to see any vulnerability, any true hurt, because our music was always so optimistic and we were pretty well known for lifting up the crowd. But with age and with experience, you find strength in admitting that you're hurting, because that's human, and that your audience will listen to and say, I'm hurting too. And you're telling me I'm going to get better because you're hurting and I'm hurting and we're going to get better. Okay. And that's a better message, but you have to be at a certain place in your own life to understand what it means.
Thank you very much. It's a very nice album. Lots of success. We wait for you in Brazil.
Thank you
very
much.
Take good care. Best regards to Dorothy and all the family.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was great. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Bye.
Gostou da conversa? No Globoplay você pode acompanhar e também ver as imagens de tudo que rolou. Até lá.